We are in the auditorium at the Salk Institute. This is lunch break at the 9th scientific meeting of the stem cell meeting on the MESA. And we are with this morning's keynote speaker, Laura Nicholson from the University of Yale, professor of anesthesiology, biomedical engineering, and done a bunch of other things, and also founder of a company called Humacyte. And there is a talk now online, so people can go and look at the details of your presentation. But in essence, do a quick intro to it.
Yeah, well my talk this morning really covered efforts at trying to engineer tissues that are fairly simple, blood vessels, going all the way up to tissues that are extremely complex, such as lung, and the types of biological and engineering thinking that have to go into trying to tackle each one of those challenges.
Yeah. Now, I asked you something afterwards. Maybe I should have asked you at the time. That your talk and the panel that followed on engineering, here were a lot of people talking about biomedical issues, molecular biological issues. Engineers. This sort of collaborative enterprise, I said to all of you, when did this start? Has this been going on for a long time? Was there a precipitating event? And you all looked at me and went, not very long.
Well, I think there's been a lot of talk about collaboration between bioengineers, biomedical engineers, and people who do basic biology and basic science. And there's been hopeful talk, I think, for decades. But to be completely honest, I think the number of real collaborations has accelerated tremendously in the last 5 years. And I think part of it is that there is a growing push culturally, nationally, to make science, the terrific science that's being done, to make it more applicable to patients' lives. And in order to move science into the clinic, that often requires some sort of engineering component. Either you're engineering the molecule or the cell or whatever.
Yes, there was a talk last night at the public forum. Carl June gave a talk as well. Again, one's looking at cell therapies as opposed to trying to smite the disease with some huge thing like chemotherapy and so on. So there's a shift, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. If you look historically, I can remember reading an article 15, 17 years ago that said that big pharma will never make biological molecules profitable. It's just too hard. And that we will always be stuck with small molecule therapeutics. Now, if you look at total sales in the pharmaceutical industry, 1/3 of total sales is in biologics, antibodies and proteins. So it went from being impossible 15 years ago to being 1/3 of the whole story now. And I think the next level of complexity is going to be cell therapy, and I think that's going to follow.
Right. Yeah. How did you get into this business? just think back for people who are sitting now in high school or whatever. Yeah. What was your trajectory? Go back quite a way.
Way back. You know, from the time I was very little, I wanted to be a physician. Actually, I wanted to be a vet before I wanted to be a physician. But then I decided that maybe taking care of humans might be a little more interesting. But I was convinced from the time I was in high school that I wanted to, in addition to practicing medicine, I wanted to change the way we practiced medicine. Yeah. And I knew that had to be through research. And because my thinking was always in a very sort of applied way, that tended to draw me toward bioengineering.
Yeah, but you know, that's not a 7-year-old sitting around thinking that.
No. Well, the 7-year-old was...
Usually people, if they go into science or medicine, it's because they... parents are doctors, or they had a great teacher, or they read a book or something. Yeah. Is there, remember a stimulus?
Both my parents were scientists.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's that for sure. There's that for sure. But it's not like anybody ever told me, oh, this is what we expect you to do, or this is what you should do. But those are the things that just were intriguing to me and came easily.
All right. Now, having gone through all this stuff, having gone through the trajectory... there was a nice little book some years ago by Sir Peter Medawar, this great English scientist, who is called Advice to a Young Scientist. Do you have any advice to young scientists?
my advice to young scientists is to absorb all of the wonder of what's happening in science now, but not to be intimidated by it. I think science is growing at just an exponential pace. That the number of scientists and the amount of scientific knowledge that we're having is just doubling every certain number of years. So I think for some people that can be a little bit intimidating or off-putting. And so on the one hand, I think folks shouldn't be intimidated by that. They should be excited by that. But young scientists also have to realize that you kind of can't know it all. It's always important to become very good at your particular thing, at your particular passion. And that's always been true, and it's still just as true now, even though the scientific world is exploding.
What are you optimistic about in science?
I am optimistic that barriers are coming down in between disciplines, that departments of chemistry and physics and biology and engineering, which all used to be fairly siloed, now do not expect to be that way or to remain that way. And I really think that the most exciting advances are occurring on the margins. There's very little low-hanging fruit anymore, I don't think, in science. But the easiest wins, I think, occur with unexpected tools or unexpected insights that come when you reach across into another field.
Yeah, there's been a debate going on about the alleged clash. This is an old story, the two cultures, the sciences and the humanities and mm-hmm. so on. Mm-hmm. Does that permeate your area? Does it get into what you're doing at Yale or anything?
Well, Yale is a terrific school for the humanities. Mm. It's incredibly strong in the humanities and law, and obviously Yale Law School, produced half the presidents. But, it's those two worlds, I think, are still, on many campuses, still fairly separate. There's not a lot of clash, but it is a little, there's still a divide there. It's still like you have to cross a body of water to get mm-hmm. to get over to that other culture. And maybe that'll change in the next couple decades. I don't know.
Mm. When he came into office, President Obama, at the very beginning, said that his administration would restore science to its rightful place. Do you remember mm-hmm. that phrase?
I do.
I ask everybody new that I get my hands on, what do you think is the rightful place of science?
I think that the rightful place of science is to advise and enlighten and guide mankind in the great decisions that they have to make, but not to make the decisions for them.
I'm not going to follow that up because that was very crisp and very clear. But let me give you a little question that I often ask people. I gave you a time travel token. Mm-hmm. Which allowed you to bring to your dinner table anybody, mm-hmm. any period mm-hmm. in history, any discipline. Is there somebody you would dearly love to sit down and have?
Yes. Queen Elizabeth I.
Really? That's the first time I've ever heard that.
Oh.
Why?
She's my idol. Yes, because she ruled England brilliantly through incredible travails through her entire life, and broke every, went against every expectation and held her own and just had remarkable strength of character and was just a natural leader, and I admire that so much.
Wow, that's really interesting. And then, of course, through that period we're leading up to, I mentioned this morning when we were talking about some of the historical stuff, there's a poster outside that remembers mm-hmm. the invention of the microscope by Robert Hooke in 1668, and I mentioned that the first mouse allegedly mm-hmm. in a science experiment was used by Hooke in 1664. So after her, then we go into the restoration of, and we begin mm-hmm. with the beginning of the Royal Society, the 1600s, the 1660s, everything mm-hmm. being talked about in coffee houses and so on. So it seems like it was a great period in many ways, although you have to then forget about the Great Plague and the Great Fire.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that intrigued you. I mean, do you look back at the history of science at all?
Only a little. Only perhaps not as much as I should. You know, it's I studied philosophy of science a little bit in school, but not as much the history of science. So
do you have family?
I do.
And
Two grown children, actually. One goes to school at UCSD.
And are they scientists or doctors?
My daughter's a scientist. My son used to see me come back from the operating room, exhausted, because I'm an anesthesiologist, exhausted, and sometimes with, you know, stories that didn't end well. And he decided from a young age that he would never do that. So he's a financial guy. So good for him.
In terms of where your field is going, mm-hmm. one of the things that came up very much this morning, somebody asked you about cost effectiveness of doing
yes.
what you're talking about.
Yes.
I mean, because that gets into a whole thing about insurance
it sure does.
Companies, reimbursements,
yes, it does.
Repayment structures. And
yes, yes.
You obviously must have thought about that, having your
We do.
Company.
You know, in the context of the company, we have to think about that a lot. And it really is, you know, resources are not infinite, and it's not good enough anymore just to have something that's new. It also has to be new and better, particularly if it's expensive.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of trying to understand what the things are to tackle and what the best goals are to have, I think you have to look critically at what you're trying to develop, what problem you're trying to solve, how much of a need is there. And then it really behooves you, even before you get into the patient, to do the very best preclinical studies you can that are the most predictive of what you're going to see in man. If you do good enough animal studies, you have a pretty good idea of how well your product's going to work.
Yeah.
And that helps you make the right choices about what to pursue, because you can't pursue everything.
Yeah. Now, you had some work that was in press, in progress. We
mm-hmm.
can't ask you about that, but we can say, can we talk to you next time when we get back? Because we have to restart the meeting now.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk next time.
All right. It was great.
Thank
nice
you.
Nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.